Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Right, hello everyone. It is Red Men Radio, the Liverpool podcast from us, the guys at the Red Men TV. I am your host, Paul Machin. Sat with me around the table today for one final time this season. We've got Ross Chandler, we've got Ben Kelly, and we've got Bailey Shaw as well. Ross, hi.
Hi.
Ben, hi.
Hi.
Bailey, hi.
Hello.
Yeah, this is pretty much the last thing we're recording before Madrid. I'm starting to bubble under. We'll talk all about that in due course. The kickoff question this week comes from K8A, who says, anyone had any crazy dreams about the final yet?
I still haven't really properly thought about it. I'm still high on content from Barcelona.
Lies.
No, I'm not. Just, we've been that fucking busy this week. Yeah. Just not had time to think about
anything. I'm in your camp.
I barely watched the Europa League final last night because we've been doing stuff or recording stuff or whatever.
Because who gives a fuck about the Europa League
final?
Well,
yeah, and that, yeah. But it's like, no, I'm still watching highlights from Barcelona game. Yeah. And it's mad because I think last season there was so much pressure and excitement because we didn't expect to be there. Not that we expected to this time, but I just read an article with, like, it still doesn't feel real. Because I've not thought about it. I haven't got there in my head yet.
I mean, I discovered in one of the most bizarre circumstances this week that Chris has had a crazy dream, which I found out via the medium of him explaining his dream to Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Jordan Henderson. We did a bit on the Machin Page podcast this week. It's going out on Friday about how you should never tell professional footballers about things that you've done, superstitions or things that you've done that affects the outcome of football matches.
Pressure.
They just don't appreciate it because ultimately they're the ones doing all the hard work. But Chris basically told him he had a dream about how he scuffed a cross in for the assist that scored the winning goal. So he didn't even score the winning goal in his dream. He just dreamt that he got this. I haven't dreamt about the final yet, other than I dreamt that we beat Juventus in it about 3 or 4 weeks ago or whatever. You know, about 4 weeks, I guess, when they were still in the competition.
I tried to beat Barcelona 4-0 when we were 3-0 down.
Did you?
Is that genuine truth?
That happens. It's the actual reality of what happened. Okay, anyone else?
I had a dream of, I think it must have been around the weekend because it was the Istanbul anniversary. I had a dream that we lost to AC Milan. And like a mad game, like 4-3, and I woke up really sad, and then realised that it was one of them dreams where you wake up and for like 10 seconds you think it was real, and then there was this overwhelming sense of belief that I hadn't like half watched the Champions League because a dream's never vivid. Yeah. It's just
I'm having anxiety dreams about not about the final but about getting to the final, about like because it's bad enough traveling. So I just had a little break. I always say you can't relax until you put your bag on the bed in the hotel or whatever it is. That's the moment where you drop your bag and you go, oh, and you can finally appreciate it. Whereas the mad thing about travelling for footy is you've got so many other hoops to jump through, and in this instance, I've still got to collect my ticket in Madrid. So like, I've got that whole like nightmare. It's like it's a bit like when you stay over somewhere and you've got to get a train or a flight the next morning. You never sleep well that night because you've got that hanging over your head of like, what if I sleep late? What if my alarm doesn't go off? What if I miss it?
Could that come to work?
Yeah.
Fucking forever early.
Yeah.
I was an accident. Like, if you're at football, I would left a week early. Yeah. I'll be there now.
Yeah, just
to make sure.
I've had a lot of them, but no actual dreams about the final just yet. I'll save them for tonight, probably. Okay, news before we move on. Jürgen Klopp's confirmed that Roberto Firmino will likely be fit for this one, but no Naby Keita. Bailey, it was always going to be a long shot for Naby to be available for this one. Mm-hmm. I think we all had a little moment where we saw the news that he'd gone with to the camp in Marbella, that maybe there might be some miraculous recovery. But it's a shame because we would, you know, we were just starting to see the real Naby Keita in the last few weeks. I think it would have been a great option. But I think most importantly, above all else, getting Firmino fit has got to be priority number one.
Yeah, Firmino's the star man. And as much as I'll sing Diogo's praises till I die, like with Firmino and that team, we're a whole, we step it up a level big time. Like to prepare for Liverpool with Firmino, and it's impossible because we're like a Rubik's Cube. When he's in the team, he does so much. You don't know if he's going to play the nine all game, you know if he's going to play the 10, you know if he's going to go wide. He drags men like no other player on our team does. And the Naby Keita stuff, it is a shame because I think we were starting to see like the Naby Keita that we had signed. You know, it caught up with that lag of what it takes players to settle in, and we were seeing the Naby Keita of Leipzig. But I think that what the introduction I think is nice is that we've had it in that position, Oxlade-Chamberlain's appearance. Yeah. And I think that's a really encouraging factor. I don't know the level of his fitness, but it's nice to know Bobby's on the bench, and instead of it being, you know, oh, we've got an Adam Lallana to come on, you've got Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, the guy who was so important.
And moreover, it's not like, oh, thank God we've got Oxlade-Chamberlain on the bench. Because if we should hopefully not have to use him. We should hopefully not. We should in the ideal world, we won't see a single second of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain at the weekend. Did anyone read the Player Tribune, Andy Robertson?
Yeah,
yeah. What I thought was really interesting about the Keita stuff, actually taking from the Robertson interview, Ben, is that Robbo talks about that time of not being in the side and being a bit disappointed and being in and out. And we didn't know it at the time. We've said it since. And we've used Robertson as an example to put onto Fabinho and Keita about how Klopp just likes to make everyone get bedded in. And how you get the feeling of that with Keita. That's why it's so disappointing, because it felt like it maybe a slightly elongated period, but he had finally bedded in. He finally felt himself a Liverpool player. And to just, you know, that I mean, obviously it's the Barcelona game, isn't it, that he picks up the injury in the new camp. Such a shame for him, because I think he's going to have a transformative effect on our midfield when we get him in more regularly. So it would have been nice to have that extra body.
Even that extra. But no, it is disappointing. Because, as you say, we were starting to see the best of him. But at the same time, I'm not sure it has started the game anyway. I think the midfield three for me is pretty much nailed on: Fabinho, Henderson, Wijnaldum. If any other midfield starts, I'll be surprised.
Well, it's mad, isn't it? We did this on the build-up show. I mean, Ben says that. I 100% agree. That's the midfield that I think. And yet we started Milner at Anfield, and we started Keita in the new camp.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah, so if he had been fit, there's every chance we could have gone with any other combination there.
And that's the complete difference to last year when you're saying about Alan coming on. This time, you know, there's a range of midfielders, or even you could argue defensive people that can start or up front. You know, we mentioned Origi before.
Forfeit centre halves.
Yeah,
we've got the right back option
for the first time in about, I don't know, 10 years. We've got a squad. And you know, we've had squads of sorts, but not squads with quality. You can look at the bench, and you said before, like, we've got options, who should we bring on? And it's an advantage for us, like, you know, Spurs guessing game, who's going to start in that midfield. I think you get something from each midfielder that we've got. I think Fabinho's nailed on for me, and probably Henderson as well. I think it's also between Gini and Milner. But Milner brings you that mentality and experience that the others haven't really got. They have from last season, and they want to do it. But you saw Gini, you know, he was annoyed that he didn't start at Barcelona at Anfield, came on and changed the game and scored. So
I think,
you
know, to me, Milner's got the best attributes of being probably the best sub you could have on the bench, because obviously last year we didn't have Fabinho, so we were having to play one out of him in that six, whereas now you've pushed everyone up a bit. So, you know, you've got Hendo in the 8/10, one out of him in the 8, and Fabinho in the 6, where if it's the 70th minute and we have got a lead, we've got a leader to bring on the pitch.
Whatever situation we're in, in Milner's the ideal sub to have. And, you know, and on top of that,
there's three positions on that pitch, Ben, where if you had to bring Milner on, and as much as we'd be aware, Sy, for not having Trent or Robertson or any of the midfielders in, you're not going, oh my God, it's not like bringing Lallana on to replace Mo Salah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other thing that we've got to consider is that if James Milner starts and it goes to penalties, is he lasting 120 minutes? You want him on a penalty. If he comes on after an hour, you know, and it's level, or we're chasing a goal and then we get that equaliser and we go into extra time, as much as it's a nerve-wracking thing to think about, it's something that, that will be being considered at Melwood this week. Mm. You know, they must be talking about, OK, well, what situation are we going to go into if the game goes like this and like this? And I think, I think it's an advantage almost for Tottenham because they're pretty much certain of what we're going to do, I think. Mm-hmm. I think with them, there's a little bit more... We're guessing a little bit more of them. You know, are they going to play Kane? You know, the Moura, which midfielder are they going to play? Are they going to play Dele Alli? You know, there's a bit more of a lottery to them. I think that's the only reason I can sort of think that Klopp might want to start Milner because it's a little bit more of a surprise on the night. You know, if he wants to start bring on Wijnaldum later on, I don't think he'll allow Tottenham's thinking to come in the way of his thinking, though. I think he'll just pick the team that he wants to pick.
I don't think the occasion will get to Milner. You know, the first 5-10 minutes is crucial because everyone, like, nerves are on edge and stuff, and you need someone with that experience and now to kind of calm things down. Or, you know, we saw with like Neymar and other people just throwing a tackle, let someone in there and go, actually, this is...
Isn't it mad, though? Because, again, this is the situation where we're in. You can go through the squad and I can make a case for being fine with almost any player going in there. And the Wijnaldum stuff is, because I can look at it and go, well, look at his impact off the bench against Barcelona, as mentioned, comes in and scores. But look at him from the start in Rome. You know, he goes and gets the goal that basically puts us in the final last season. You know, it's the biggest moment of that away game. What a time to score an away goal for a few teams.
They could both start. Genie played at 10 not so long ago, didn't he? Bobby's not injured. Go and put him in there.
Oh, God.
I think the best thing for me is, like you say, you know, Milner's got the leadership qualities. I think that, for the first time ever, we've got 9 players on that pitch, bar Fabinho and Alisson, who've done this before. You know, they've actually finally got, all of them have got a cup final experience in them, and that's something that we've not had. You know, Milner's been the guy, that's only guy on our team that's won a Premier League. He's the guy that knows what it takes, but we've now done, last season, a Champions League final, and now a title race, very early on in the evolution of this squad. So I think that's the biggest thing that we've got over Tottenham is, you know, we've done this against Real Madrid, you know, and as much as they might understand Liverpool in the Premier League, very different to Liverpool in the Champions League and in a cup final. So it'd be really exciting to see sort of how Tottenham actually fare mentally wise.
Absolutely. We're going to talk a little bit more. In fact, we're going to talk a lot more about it because we're in a Champions League final. Before we do, 2 things to let you know. If you want to hear more about Jurgen Klopp's press conference and more of the news around Liverpool Football Club, we've done a Reds News Roundup special, which is on the redmentv.com. We pick through the best bits of Jurgen's pre-Champions League press conference from the media day and talk through them in depth. It was me, Ross and Steen. It was a very, very good show indeed. In addition, this week's sponsor is Threads for Reds. I'm currently sporting the Trabs t-shirt, which I think we can just about see. It is fit. It is so fit. And you can get it on Threads for Reds. Threadsforreds.com. Moving away from the mic to show you and still talking. Threadsforreds.com. There's a code. I believe it's still running because I didn't check this out with Chris before doing this because he's away. Caps Redmen 10 with the number 10, so it's REDMEN10 to get yourself 10% off at threadsforreds.com. The final then, oh my. How is the level of anticipation, Ben? How are you? Have you coped this past few weeks?
At first, it was, I kind of had a hangover from not only Pot World but also the Premier League season in general. There's been a lot of talk about the break, you know, and the gap, and, you know, is that halting momentum and all this? And I, like last season, there was a 2-week break, and that felt like enough last season because we didn't have such a stressful leave campaign. I was almost happy for an extra week this time from my own perspective in terms of I understand the impact that it might have on the team and, you know, Tottenham and yada yada. That's been discussed at length. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was happy to just take that first week to just go, I'm relaxed, you know. Yeah. My uni stuff had all finished. Like, I was ramping up work and stuff like that, and I was just like, I'm ready to take a step away from this just for a little while before I really have to start thinking about this. It's only really in the last week, like, you know, obviously we've been doing our content. I've watched a lot of the Anfield Raps content, which has been great, but also listening to all that and watching all that. I felt it last year as well, where, like, it's that time of the year where all the football podcasts in the world are talking about the Champions League final.
Yeah.
So listening to all that, has made my anticipation go up, but also made me a lot more nervous.
The funny thing about it is, really, there's been a bit of a dearth of content around the place, I think. As much as you're writing that, you know, if I spread me wings a bit further afield, I could probably find, I'm sure the Guardian are probably doing it and all these kind of things as well. Like, but like the Echo haven't done the same kind of podcasts. The rapper did one early doors, which was consumed long before I really needed it, kind of thing. And we've only just really started to bring it out. I listened to our Boss Night Unplugged. I was halfway through that, listening to that in the car before, and that's the first thing that really got me. I was fine. I wasn't really thinking about it. I had a bit of a holiday. Came back to the media day, and that made me feel really good. But like that bubbling under nervous anticipation thing hit me at 6 o'clock this morning when I woke up and couldn't get back to sleep. And that's where I think we're all at now. We're now at that point where there's no escaping it. There's a ticking clock countdown to kick off. Mm. And it's about how many of those hours of the day can we sleep away or fill with as much Liverpool content as we can.
Yeah, definitely. And like, do you know what? The start of this show where you said, you know, this is the last show we do before we could be 6 stars from here on out. Mm. That exact moment, I felt my stomach drop. You know, like, because I'm with Ross, you know, it's been very full throttle since the season's finished doing content and stuff. So like to sit down and be like, oh, let's talk about what's happening in 2 days' time. It's mental. But for me, like, obviously you mentioned the Echo and the Guardian and stuff. I'm more of a modern person, so I consume my media more through YouTube.
A modern person.
Don't get it. I'm reading a the newspapers, Bailey. Jesus Christ, I'm not getting it via my phonograph.
So my content comes
that
from...
That pigeon that's in there, that's mine, that.
But the town crier's just come to deliver the tea.
It's a raven. But, The thing for me is, you're right, like, there's been a wash of content of people from left and right field talking about Liverpool and Spurs. And, like, for example, like True Geordie, I watched a video that he did with Lawrence about Spurs and Liverpool. I watched, like, Joe Weller specifically made a podcast to talk about this, and he's a Brighton / Chelsea fan. And it's like, my favourite thing is listening to other fans' opinion on Liverpool, because we work in Liverpool, you know, we know each other's opinions, we do the newsroom every week, we know about as well as anyone everyone's opinion on Liverpool. So to hear the rival fans' opinion, it's so interesting to me to see, like, okay, so from a Newcastle perspective, how do you see Liverpool? Who do you think's going to win? And that excites me, because I've not watched one podcast yet or listened to one podcast yet where nobody's put their money on Liverpool.
Yeah. I know, and that makes me more nervous, to be honest. It's so strange being the favourites in this for once.
I mean, this is the thing. We always talk about the generational thing of Liverpool and what's my Liverpool. I mean, Dad's Liverpool is different to my Liverpool, and my Liverpool's difficult. They're different to your Liverpool, Ben. It's just the era of Liverpool that you grow up with. And I'm so used to being uncomfortable with Liverpool being the favourites, because whenever we're the favourites, we always seem to make harder work of it. And people say, well, hang on, we weren't the favourites in Istanbul. And like, I know, that's just a mad outlier of a game, but we went into 2001, the UEFA Cup final against Alaves. We beat fucking Barcelona on the way to get there, and we had Alaves in the final, and we had to go to a golden goal, and I was 17 and in pieces by the end of that game. I think of Cardiff in the League Cup final. You think of Birmingham in the League Cup final,
West Ham
in the FA Cup final. Exactly, when you know. So, but there's a really weird vibe, I think, around the whole thing this time, Ross. That we talked a lot about this on the build up, of course, but I think it's so important. There's a real sense of optimism, but there's a real sense of, I say, calm or power or whatever. It is the most comfortable I've felt with Liverpool being the favourite, is what I'm saying.
We spend so much of our time talking about this team and this squad and how they're growing and developing, but we never talk about how fans are doing it as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go through those motions, and I'm sure I've mentioned your different generation. You know, I remember Istanbul quite well. I was 15, 16 at the time, and you're probably a lot younger, so you don't have that in your, and you've seen finals where we've fallen apart and stuff. But from last season, it's difficult to go be... There's a fine line between arrogance and confidence, and there's nothing wrong with being confident. There's nothing wrong with supporting your team or thinking, actually, we might be the favourites here, without being arrogant about it, and to say, actually, no, we are good. You know, 97 points, the third highest total in Premier League history. You know, you've got stuff to shout about, haven't you, really, to get to a final, to beat Barcelona, final. Why shouldn't you be made up with this team? And why shouldn't you go, as you mentioned, every department, and we've seen the growth in this side again from last season, of the squad depth and the quality of going, actually, I feel a lot more mentally prepared for if something does go wrong. And Klopp was asking in the press conference, it was Salah goes, well, the answer's there, isn't it? you know, you got Chamberlain on there, or you got, you know, Origi, someone else to come on. That fills me with confidence, and obviously Carrie's not been there at all.
Yeah, it feels a bit like Ramos. It feels a bit like the 97 points thing. We're, if we're able to win this, it feels like we'll be able to be made up with finishing second in the league, which sounds daft because we live in this weird culture, and there's a few things that I've noticed that are doing my head in around the build-up to all this. But it's that, like, because of like the whole winding Arsenal about the fourth place trophy thing for years, and because of the whole Spurs putting the pressure on thing that became a bit of a meme a couple of years ago, we're all terrified to be happy with a club that hasn't won a trophy, and we're absolutely fine to be happy with that, because it's all about your experience, it's all about the things, the memories you make along the way, and your sense of enjoyment from it along the way. But it's I really feel as though, you know, you've got the flip side and the real negative potential future, which we won't look into because I'm not Dr. Strange. I don't need to see every possible outcome. I'll just prepare to focus on the positive instead. If we win the European Cup, we can look at it and go, well, bloody hell, it's a team that won the European Cup and got the third highest points total in league history. That's a massive achievement. Yeah. You can couple them together. It's kind of like how Man City are adding on the Charity Shield to a season when you won loads. You can do that when you've won loads of other trophies. You don't want to have an open-top bus tour for a Charity Shield or for finishing second, but it adds to the spirit of positivity around the whole package when you've got something actually to celebrate.
Despite that gap that you mentioned before, I've still not had time to think about that either. I know I mentioned it then, but I've still not had time to appreciate how good this side is and how far we've come, because it was so erratic the last 2 months of the season of watching City and watching us, and then like being disappointed to then go, I want you to switch your mindset because you've got another a huge game in three weeks' time.
When the dust settles. You know, when we get into the summer and we do the review stuff, I think that will definitely come because you've got to appreciate, and you've got to look at Man City as well. And when the dust settles, we'll be able to finally appreciate how good they are, because we've been comparing us with them all season. You know, we'll have that opportunity. It is what it is.
If we lose, it will be a disappointing. It will be a disappointing season, and it shouldn't be because it shouldn't be because getting to a Champions League final and finishing second league and the points total blah 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 represents such a stellar step forward, a massive leap forward in terms of Liverpool quality, but that's the thing, isn't it? You know, next week, hopefully, we'll be able to, you know, breathe that huge, huge sigh of relief, have a nice drink, you know, mull it all over, pick the bones out of it, and we'll finally have context for the whole season.
I've just got such a stark contrast from the season of last season, because Robertson mentioned it in his article that, you know, he says he doesn't like talking about, you know, fairy tale and things being called dreamland, because if you work hard, you work hard and you get the results that you've worked for. But for me, last season did feel like a bit fairy tale. Mm-hmm. A, with, you know, the draw that we got with Porto and Roma, but then also smashing City. But we also had pretty subpar goalkeeper. We didn't have a defined defensive midfield like we do now. And we had one incredible right winger and two really good forwards, but they weren't really on the same level as Salah last season. And it felt like such a stretch. And when it did fall, it felt gutting. Whereas now it does feel like this is the hard work.
We for so many years, and I felt this was changed last season, but I can see it more so this season. That for years we've always been built around one or two players. Mm. So in 08-09, well, and a couple of seasons leading up to that, we needed Fernando Torres to be in the side, because we just weren't the same side without Torres in there. In the early noughties, you needed Michael Owen in your team. Yeah. You needed Robbie Fowler in your team. You needed Luis Suarez in your team. I mean, that's a slight sea change because obviously we still had Sturridge, which helped in that regard, and that's kind of why it's a bit more similar. We've moved on a touch, but you're right, Salah was so far ahead, the best player we had, even though he wasn't meant to be, because the whole squad was brilliant and they worked great. It still left us in that situation where when you took him out, it felt like an absolute kick in the balls. Yeah. Whereas now, you know, you put Sadio Mane centre forward and he'll score, and you know, I will bring Shaqiri on, or we'll put Divock Origi left wing, or we'll put Divock Origi centre forward, and you're right, this is the first time in forever it hasn't felt, you're right, like it's all predicated on this like flying by the seat of our pants. We need
everything
to
fall
be
our
perfect
way. And that's, I think Spurs helped with that as well, because I think the fact we had Real Madrid, at the time, two-time back-to-back Champions League winning players with Ronaldo, who was on fire, with Zidane, who was having a fantastic season. It felt like we were coming, we dragged our way into that final, and then we had to face the final boss, which was Real Madrid. Like they were the peak of football at the time. And then this
it's
season,
the first time you face M. Bison on Street Fighter and you go, holy hell, what's that massive flaming thing he's doing?
Or you get Mike Tyson.
I'm on fire! I'm on fire!
Or you get Mike Tyson in Punch-Out and you're like, oh, give me a break. Like that exact, that's how it felt. Whereas now it's Spurs, it feels like we've got a much more considered game plan. And like you say, you've got balance across the teams. I think the two teams are much more balanced. It just feels more bearable, you know, and I can much more comprehend this season after the performances and the season we've had as opposed to last season.
Bailey mentioned like the fans of other clubs and that watching it and talking about it and anticipating and all that. Some of the reactions, and I realise, of course, it's not a criticism of people in general, because people's anxieties get the better of them. I think more so in the modern world, it's mad how everyone's got like the expression my anxieties. It's a separate thing, of course, but it comes out because we've all got superstitions, even if they're very, very deeply rooted. You know, I promised myself I wasn't going to have any this season. I was going to go in a different turnstile every week, and I was going to have, you know, go to different bars and use different toilets in the ground and all that. And then by a quarter of the way into the season, I was doing exactly the same thing every single time. It's just the way it is. But I realised how the nerves and stuff been around it. Or everyone, certain people, it's a massive trigger. The pressure of the final come up is a massive trigger for people. I've seen so many people who are just desperate. Like I put a tweet out about that, because I saw, it was on the kickoff, and I saw Hugh Wizzy off the Europa League final, basically, they just scored the fourth. He's dead buried, and he started saying, oh, I'm supporting Liverpool. And it really did my head in, because I was just like, I don't fucking want you as a Liverpool fan, mate, to be honest. I don't want fucking Bellends, who don't care, supporting our football team, because it's just going to add to the whole environment around it, like, oh, fuck you, Liverpool, you're losers, you dickheads, if it goes wrong. We don't want the bandwagon jumpers in this regard. No. I want people who genuinely support Liverpool. If you want to go and buy a Liverpool scarf and a Liverpool shirt and you want to go and sing the songs and jump up and down, by all means, go and do it. But then loads of people have jumped on me back about it because, like, I really like Arsenal, or we should get all the support, we take all the support we can get. Fuck that. You know, people hate us.
We're not a charity.
Well, no, but people, I fucking hate Arsenal for a start because, you know, the first heartbreak I suffered in football tears, I mean, look, on a serious note, I remember Hillsborough, and it came after Hillsborough, of course, was losing the league to them in 89, but that was the first time I watched a Liverpool game of football, remember watching it and remember feeling the devastation of seeing it. So I've never truly liked Arsenal. I developed a soft spot for their brand of football at times in the early days under Wenger. Yeah. I like some of their players over the years and what have you, but fuck Arsenal. But this is the thing, but it's like I love the siege mentality of it all, and that's the only problem with all of this stuff is all the things that it breeds. We should give a fuck about what other people think. We don't want other fans.
I've had this conversation and almost argument with me mates over this year and last year. I get it a bit more this year because they're not Liverpool fans, they're a bit more neutral, so like they don't want to watch it in Liverpool because they don't want to be swayed by a crowd. But like last year with Real Madrid, I had the argument with like with one of my mates in particular, because basically everybody else was like in the Liverpool camp and happy to go out, and he was like, well, I want Real Madrid to win. And I was like, well, don't come then. I don't want to stand there and actively, if you're going to actively stand there and want Real Madrid to win this game, I don't want to watch it with you. Yeah. And I don't want to watch it if you're going to stand there and cheer for Liverpool because you feel like you've got to because you're in a Liverpool bar with Liverpool fans. If you, as a QPR fan, by the way, you want to come down and genuinely wish us well, then by all means, come and we'll have a good day. But don't just stand there and think, well, I've got to cheer this goal because I'm peer pressured into doing it, and really I want Real Madrid to win, or really I want Tottenham to win. Go away. Go away.
It's too important for me to have to waste a percentage of my brain power on
concern about what you think. Yeah.
And it being in my space where I'm having to concentrate upon this thing. I've had it before. Like, you know, you're right. To be honest, it's like when my mum watches, if I remember my dad's watching the game, my mum comes in and goes like, what's the score? And it's like, just go away. The fucking telly and see the score. If you want to see the score, mum, love you. But like, and don't go like, see the score and it's bad and go, oh, that's bad, isn't it? And it's like, it is bad.
I had this actually last year because me and my brother went to my dad's house, and my brother actually kicked up such a fuss because his own mum was going to come and watch it. And he was like, dad, no, not happening. And he texted her and was like, mum, I love you, but I'm watching it with my dad and my brother. Like, and he was like, because there's a difference, but it's just, You want to be around like-minded people that know the stakes.
Yeah.
You don't want people there like, what are they doing? Is that offside? And you're like, it's a fucking goal kick.
Yeah.
Like, shut up.
It's not even, for me, it's not even the real thing. Like, my mum knows the rules of football. My mum's gone to football when, you know, in the early days. She went to Liverpool games all over the place in the early days of her going out with my dad. So she's not like that, you know, because that's another breed of person for who don't, and this is not limited to women, by the way. This is not the sexism part of the podcast. This is limited to people who just don't like football. Yeah. It's like when I got thrown into having to watch the Rugby World Cup in 2003, I was that person. Well, why is that? Why is that? You know what I mean? I'm a bell end. You know, I'd have annoyed the life out of any genuine rugby fans at that time. But it is that thing of, like, bless her. Like, my wife wouldn't give a toss about watching it at all. Mm. But my mum was round at our house for the Barcelona game, and my mum was basically the one who put it on the telly because she cares.
Yeah.
But not like, I can't have it, and I don't want this. I feel like saying this. And the thing about the Champions League is, look, it's the biggest game in football. All the eyes are going to be on it, and you've got to take the rough with the smooth because, you know, it will win a generation of new fans if we win this. If we win this game, we'll win a generation of new fans just for being in it, because this will be the first Liverpool game that loads of people watch, and they might just be sparked into sharing the love for the football club, and that'll grow from there. But the most important line I put in the tweet was just like, Arsenal fans, go and have Aldi, lads. Just go and have a break from footy, honestly, give it a miss, because there's nothing to be... You're not going to win, because you're not going to gain enjoyment from seeing Liverpool win it, and it's going to be the worst thing that's ever happened to you if Spurs win it. Just do what all the Evertonians are doing. Just go and book the caravan. Yeah. Just go and book the caravan, go to pictures.
Go to Wales.
Go somewhere else. Go get away from it all, because and then if it goes your way and you're still going to have all your gifts and your pictures and your stills and all that to banter your mates to death with in the ensuing days, weeks, months and years. But just stay fucking clear of it. If you've got nothing nice to say, then say nothing. You know what I mean?
Isn't that a sign of how far we've come and how far they've fallen? They're clinging on all hopes that, you know, the happiness of their season is Spurs losing a Champions League final, because they've done nothing.
It's all just schadenfreude. That's what it is. And we've had one. But and look, this is the hypocrisy of being a football fan, of course. Like, because I've lived for 25 years of my life enjoying the fuck out of every Man United defeat. Yeah. And every time they've not won it, I watched the Barcelona Champions League final when Barcelona won. And I've been that gobshite. Except, I know, I'm actively rooting against the team that I hate. You know what I mean? There's a difference. Mm. I don't mind everyone not supporting us. That's fine. I don't want people who don't give a fuck supporting us, to be honest. But, again, hypocrisy, and it was mentioned to me on Twitter, you know, we were happy to throw our lot in behind Leicester and Burnley and all this stuff along the way. So,
because there was also a few Arsenal fans that were happy for Arsenal to lose. It meant that Tottenham would lose as well on Saturday. And I was like, why the fuck would you want that?
That's another level. That's another level of weirdness in my eyes. But I think I agree with what you're saying to an extent, in terms of I don't want teams supporting us because they want Tottenham to lose. But at the same time, I enjoy the fact that, as you say, this is the biggest game possibly in world football. And for the second year in a row, we're going to have millions and millions of people watching our team on Sunday. And that gives me an immense sense of pride that, you know, I was saying to Tom upstairs before, when dealing with customers in the shop, it's like Christmas at the moment, because it's like, you know, you're building up to Christmas, you're like, have a good Christmas. It's at the moment, it's like, well, enjoy the final on Saturday. Yeah. And next week it'll be, did you enjoy the final? Hopefully they have and all that. And it's like,
Is this in the Apple script?
Well, apparently, yeah.
Jordan Belfort style.
Yeah. It's the classic trying to fill awkward silences with people in retail. Ah, yeah, never mind. But the point I'm driving at is, I've spoken to so many people this week who don't care about football at all, but they're watching the game on Saturday because it's so good for the city.
And that,
for me, like this time last year when I watched my team walk out alongside Real Madrid and walk past that trophy and add the red ribbon on the one side. And I know Kiev was amazing because it had them like steps leading up to the pitch. Like, that was possibly one of the proudest moments of my life, because I was stood with all my mates who aren't Liverpool fans, like, well, that's my team, and I'm going to watch them do this, win or lose. It's the same this weekend, and in a way, like, it's just a sense of pride. That's all it is.
It's like seeing one of your best mates on the red carpet at the Oscars. You know what I mean? It's such a culturally significant thing. And when you're a football fan, it, like, the World Cup's got it, but international football has just taken such a nosedive, in my opinion, over the last, you know, 20 years or whatever. The importance isn't quite the same, because club football is the be-all and end-all, ultimately. And I tried to explain to people last year,
having never been to a Champions League final in person before, because you know I didn't go to Istanbul, I didn't go to Athens. I was too young for the other ones in the 80s, and I'm not born in the 70s. So just the sense of walking round the stadium in Kiev beforehand, it's just like I spent half an hour walking around the stadium just breathing and just trying to look at everything I could look at, because you're right, there's something so incredible about it. And that's the thing to remember it for everyone, you know, because there'll be people trying to take pot shots around, you know, and because that's just what social media is, it's just gangs of dickheads roaming free. Is that there's such a, you're right, that feeling of immense pride of just being there and knowing that we're on this stage, we're on a stage that you can't take that away from us. No. We might not win, but you can't take away the fact that every football fan in world football wants to be on that pitch. Then, secondly, wants their team to be on that pitch. Then, thirdly, wants to be in the stands watching their team on that pitch. That's like, you know, the hierarchy of all these things, and we get to do that. And it's the second time on the bounce of us doing it. So yeah, all the rest of it's just fucking noise, really, isn't it? Bailey, 538. I've got us at 72%. Chance of winning the final. Wow. I mean, bearing in mind the others is like a 70% chance of winning the league at the start of January, because that's just how percentages work and what have you. Knowing that, how has that immediately impacted your anxiety of this game?
I don't know, because I feel okay, because I feel I feel like, again, you have to take them with a pinch of salt, and it's the same with like, you know, Lovren and Mignolet. When you play them, you're like, they've been fine for a year, but you know they've got something in them, and that underlying fear will always be here. And it's the same here. Like, I know, man for man, we're a better team than Tottenham. I know we've got a more accomplished manager than Tottenham. Okay, we've neither of us have won anything, but Klopp's been to way more finals than Pochettino. Mm-hmm. We've had a much better season. They've lost like 12, 13 games. We've lost one. Everything, if you took it into a pure statistical point of view, that's the reason why it's so... It swayed in our favour, but stats like that, they don't particularly faze, because you're right. What does it mean?
Yeah, they're all changed by a ball going in off someone's ass. Ross, I want to talk about Jordan Henderson. I'm so pleased that we're now inhabiting a world where he's getting the fair credit for the performances, because he's finally been allowed to put the performances in. He's off. He's basically, you know, the perfect example of always the bridesmaid. Yeah. And I remember saying last season when they did that massive mural painting thing that they were selling. It was all like the Liverpool players, past and present, and all the glorious ones. And Henderson's in there. And I was thinking of all the stick he was getting, and that he could have ended up with the European Cup at the end of it. It's a year on. The situation hasn't changed in that regard, but it does feel as though Jordan Henderson is finally in a position, like he's put the hard graft in, he's done the running for the team, he's been selfless, he's played out of position, he's done all these things, he's been a great leader on and off the pitch. He's finally been enabled, trusting that he's not going to be playing in the DM in this game, he's been handed the power to shape his own destiny and Liverpool's destiny.
Yeah, I think he's always had it. I think, you know, those that watch football as much as we do can appreciate his role and know that it's, you know, I call it a no-frills non-flashy position. That's what it is, you know. Mm-hmm. Win possession back, recycle it, give it to someone else. And he's always had the Gerrard thing tarred against him. You know, he's never going to be Gerrard. He doesn't do the 70, 80 yard raking passes, and he doesn't score world. That's just not his game. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, unbelievably, you know, he's changed his role and he's got more assists and more goals to his game, because he's always had it. And it was 13-14 Henderson that had it. You know, he got the injuries, he did go out of form, but that's another thing that football fans do. You know, we're obviously quite fickle in the sense that, you know, if someone's having a poor run of form for, I don't know, 2 months, that's them done. They're immediately shit and they can never
go. All the Chelsea fans the other week going on Kepa, best goalkeeper in the world, they fucking hate them. Like, 2 months earlier, they were going, you know, he was terrible, a waste of money and blah, blah, blah. So you're right, yeah.
Same with their manager as well. But like, I still say the same thing about Joel Matip. I thought Joel Matip was done, I thought ready to sell him. Yeah. And he's shown his most consistent form since he's joined the club in the past 3 months. Like,
that's half a season, mate, to go back to that Napoli game.
Yeah.
That got us into the knockouts. You know, he was phenomenal that night. He was brilliant, and he broke his collarbone, put one big tasty header in right at the end of that game, and then he was out for January. And since he's come back into the team, he's been.
But even
everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too.
Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
After that, or like the games after that, I'm still going, okay, he's going to stop now. He'll dip off now.
Gomez is back now.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, Lovren, I think Lovren came in for the Porto game and Lovren was sound. And then Matic came back in. It's like, okay, so I'm back to the squad thing that we got before. But Jordan Henderson's, in my opinion, has always had it. He's been the scapegoat when things haven't gone well, or you know, he has to be the person that you have to have a go at, because he's probably the English, not glorious thing, is it? You know, Henderson's not the sort of messy name, is it really?
It's very, very difficult for English players to win players. It's like, I hated Paul Scholes. Paul Scholes was fucking brilliant at football, but I thought he was shit because
he was ginger.
Well, because I only saw him play for England. And he was never quite as good for England as he was for Manchester United. I just see him as being dead lazy and giving away loads of bookings. And he was shit, and then he'd score, and then that was a great performance. That was a great performance. He just scored a goal, but he scored a goal. You know what I mean? So that's the thing with being an English player. It needs natural biases, because more often you're not, you think you know better. It's you watch those games more than you do. You know, less so these days, of course, with England, because no one gives a fuck. But you do. It's harder for it. People don't like Lallana. People don't like Henderson. There's always someone else. There's always some wonder kid who should be in the side ahead of these lads.
And he probably doesn't get the credit because, like you said, he's out of position. You know, someone could have flopped there or said no, couldn't they? And he's just like sucking sin and just cracked on. And then we get wait for Fabinho, built the trust with Fabinho for him to then go forward and unlock 13-14 Henderson.
To me, Jordan Henderson. And obviously there was the McCullough video that got made about him. I can't remember what the title was. Jordan Henderson, the worst player to win the Premier League, I think it was, wasn't it, that he made? But I couldn't have an opinion further away from that, in that I think Jordan Henderson's exactly the man we needed to take that armband when Steven Gerrard left. We were in one of the worst positions we'd been in, facing such a huge rebuild. And you need, the mark of a real captain is a man who can put everything on his back, take all the stick and still be the captain. And I don't think we had a guy in our team like Jordan Henderson that could do that. And like it shows now, like with Ashley Young and Paul Pogba, you know, two guys that share the captaincy at United, two guys that get the most stick in that team. Because when you are the captain, you are the focal point. And I think Jordan Henderson always knew, I don't care if people say my the way I play is bad, I don't care if they say I don't contribute. But as long as the team in general isn't getting as much stick because I'm getting the stick, that's fine. And I think that's the best quality about Jordan Henderson. He's like the Dark Knight. You know, he's a man that doesn't need all the praise, doesn't need all the plaudits. He just needs to be the glue. Yeah. And it's what Liverpool's needed ever since he was made the captain.
Exactly. He's not a fashionable player, is he? He's not, you know, it's one of the things. Like, people rate Busquets really highly because he's brilliant. But, like, you don't pay to see Sergio Busquets. You don't pay to see him. You know, you get to see him, and if you really appreciate that role, you'll watch it and you'll study it, and you'll get whatever you want to get out of watching him. You go for Messi and you go for Suarez and you go for all the boss players, the Neymars at the time, and etc. etc. One thing I think is really interesting about Henderson is that, look, it's a short sample range, but what we're able to do is I can pick up this last 2 months of the season or 6 weeks of the season when Henderson's been in this form, Ben, and I just tie that back into the Henderson that I remember from a few seasons ago when he was playing. That's what he was playing like week in, week out for us. 13, 14 and beyond, before he got he had plantar fasciitis, the heel injury, so he was out for never at the peak of his powers after then. Henderson in this form that he's been at the back end of the season is a far better player than the last two, three seasons of Steven Gerrard. Because you know, and that's the beauty of what he's getting to do. And it's funny because I remarked to him
I was off camera after we'd finished doing the interview with him this week. The last time I spoke to Henderson was two seasons ago in pre-season, and I said, Jordan, I want 10 goals out of you this year, because he was gearing up to it, he was ready for it. And then he got me, and I said to him, as he was leaving, I said, Jordan, I'm dead sorry for demanding 10 goals from me. I didn't know you'd be playing in the fucking DM for two seasons. And he burst out laughing, and he was like, next season, like, you know, like, but like laughing, it's like, and that's what I love about that, is it's a man right there who feels like he's free, he feels like he's enjoying his football, and he's just been waiting for this time to shine.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't be happy for him, because you know, we're gonna see now a version of him that he wants to be. It must have been the last 2 years must have been so frustrating, because look, I'm sure, like, he doesn't read every comment that comes his way, but like, you can't avoid it. You know, if he has a bad game in the six, and he, you know, as the players do, they post an Instagram or whatever, he'll have seen bits and bobs of abuse, and he'll have been like, it's not. He'll have been saying stuff. This isn't just frustrating because I'm not playing well, but this is frustrating because I don't want to be playing here. You know, it's like we praised Milner for years for doing roles with the team. You know, he played left back for a season. Oh, that's great. You know, he's happy to step up. I don't think Jordan Henderson gets enough credit for that.
Jordan, that captain's armband is such, and the fact that we paid loads of money for him, and we've watched him grow, is to his detriment in some regards, isn't it? Because he's been there long enough, and he was young enough when he signed, that people still harbour those, you know, like, doubts about him from the early days. Milner's just got to come in, and he gets to just be Milner, doesn't he? Henderson doesn't get the freedom, isn't afforded the same freedom.
Because that's what the pressure of the armband brings, particularly when you're following Steven Gerrard. And I think the problem that he had was, because Steven Gerrard was captain for so long and so influential to this club for so long in a variety of different teams, there's a whole generation of fans there who were, like me, basically, who had grown up with Steven Gerrard as their captain, who perhaps weren't ready for change or didn't know what change felt like in that sense. And I think that was, as a result, you end up with so much more pressure on Jordan Henderson.
It's funny, because the Henderson stuff and the Gerrard stuff is that I watched Gerrard grow up through this team. Mm. So I remember the early days of Gerrard when he was in and out, and he was rash, and he was, you know, and he was a DM, and he was a real talent, but he wasn't Steven Gerrard, the god of football. No. And that's
what I remember of him, because Steven Gerrard made his debut about 10 days before I was born. So up until I was 16, Steven Gerrard had never not been a Liverpool player for me. So I'd grown up but beginning to remember football probably from around 2005 onwards. And Steven Gerrard was the Steven Gerrard that we all know and love.
And it's not just the Liverpool stuff. Like, the era of football that I've watched, I've been blessed to see so many talents, but all of which, the big captains I remember, have been Xavi at Barcelona. They've been Totti. They've been Pirlo.
Yeah.
All midfield players that have gone down as at the top of the sort of club legends list for their respective clubs. And we had Steven Gerrard, so it felt like we were in the ring with these guys who were the powerhouses. And then to fall off from that, it felt like a fall off at the time from Gerrard to Henderson.
Is a drop off. Jordan Henderson's not Steven Gerrard. Yeah. Good enough. He's a different player. He's never going to be the best player in the world. Mm. But the point is that you're right, and it's hard. And you know, Chelsea kind of suffering from the thing now. Like, you know, it'll be even more interesting when Hazard goes, of course. But you don't replace Frank Lampard, and you don't replace John Terry. Yeah. You don't replace Wayne Rooney or Rio Ferdinand or Giggs and Beckham. You know what I mean? You can't replace these lads. And heaven help anyone who is. Fucking hell, Man United replaced Cristiano Ronaldo with Antonio Valencia. You know what I mean? Like,
replaced Ferguson with Moyes. And they're still trying to fucking do it now.
Yeah, exactly that. Like, more part ends. And the interesting thing about it, and this is why I want it for, there's two players I really want it for, and we'll talk about the other one in a second, but I want it more than any other player ever.
Trent?
No. I want it for Henderson because I think his service to the club, I think all the negativity and stuff that goes around him. There's always going to be people who dislike players. There always is. You can pick some actual legends, the people that we don't even bat an eyelid, we just consider a legend, who are hated by groups of fans because it's just, people are just odd. When you start winning silverware and you start holding trophies up, people forget
all of those bad and the fallow periods, and they forget to struggle. No, and no one remembers that Xabi Alonso had two good seasons in the time that he was at Liverpool, and he was crap. He wasn't even crap, but he wasn't the Xabi Alonso that everyone remembers in the the middle years. Mm-hmm. He was good in the first season. We won the European Cup. He was a bit up and down for a couple of seasons in between, and then he was amazing in his final season. And everyone, and then he goes on. He goes to Real Madrid, and he has this great successful career lifting all these things. For Jordan Henderson, just to put all the doubters to bed, I'd fucking love it. The other one, and to be fair, you've said Trent, maybe there's three. there is the Trent thing, but I think Trent's going to have years and years to do all these things. For me, Ross, it's Mohamed Salah. This, we talked about it already, and him get the injury, is he was set to be the biggest global superstar on the planet. He was going to win the Ballon d'Or. He was, you know, and he was going to stride into the World Cup and cause real problems for, you know, the teams that Egypt were coming up against. And he basically had all of that robbed from him. Without this being, let's dig out Sergio Ramos thing, because look, let's be honest, if Dejan Lovren, Joel Matip, Virgil van Dijk, Trent Alexander-Arnold do that to Harry Kane on Saturday and it causes Spurs to fucking lose, won't bat an eyelid. Yep. The hypocrisy of football, ladies and gentlemen. But Mo Salah, to pick himself up and to go again, I want it to be him. I want him to have the decisive factor. I want him to score the decisive goal. I want him to have that moment.
I think, don't you get all, there's a nicer man in football, is there really? There's all that stuff, and he had such a successful season, and just to get that last trophy, I think you can make a case for everyone in that sense. But for Mo Salah, I think he does deserve it. There's loads of people you pick for. I want it for myself. never mind him. I need this in my life. He's all right.
We're all like that, aren't we? You know, that's the reason we want it. Look, here's the thing. We're all going to support Liverpool, whether we win or lose the final. Yeah. We've got no choice. We've chosen our football club. Sadly, it's not like me giving up on Kevin Smith films because he became fucking rubbish at making films, you know, or M. Night Shyamalan because all his films became shite. Mm-hmm. You know, you can walk away from certain things. You walk away from games consoles and directors and authors and poets. And you walk up on music, bands. Talked about the Arctic Monkeys the other day. Loved the Arctic Monkeys. One of my favourite bands ever. And then I heard the third album and I was like, nah, not for me. Sorry. And I walked away from the Arctic Monkeys. We can't walk away from Liverpool.
Well, most hell didn't. But, I think that was not a major difference, but you know, he kind of was like our Suarez or our Torres in that sense, wasn't he? And we didn't win stuff with them, and they soon fucked off. And then most hell was like, actually, no, I'm sticking around. This team's pretty good.
Yeah, and you got Sadio Mane being asked about the Real Madrid or Juventus links or whatever, and he's just like, I'm playing in a team that beats the big teams. You're all right.
Yeah.
So, but this is the thing, isn't it? Ben, is that Ross is right. We want it for us. Yeah. We're fans, you know, and this is entitlement, by the way. And this is because there'll be fans of other teams watching it. And I hope people can appreciate, if you're a fan of another club, this might seem like entitled and it might seem a bit arrogant or whatever. When I say we deserve this, we don't deserve it any more than fans of any other football club deserved it. But we all feel as though for the love that we poured in, for the time and effort, if our club got to this stage, no matter who our club was, we would feel as though we deserved some sort of reward for it all. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
For the dog's abuse that we've suffered, for the Gerrard slip memes, for the fucking this whole Liverpool being this banter club, for your entire fandom pretty much of being Liverpool. I said this, Istanbul sustained me. I'm still the same age I was in my head when we won that. It doesn't feel like 2 minutes ago. I had that, and I had the FA Cup.
You feel dead old now?
Not even, no, but you know, but mentally, no, physically, yes. but this is the thing, for this generation, and ahead of the Istanbul thing, Gerrard and Carragher come out, and the watchwords where we've all heard the stories. We've been told it by our dads and by our uncles and by our big brothers. We want to write it. We want to write our own chapter. And for me, for your generation, you've been Bailey, I want this for me, but I want it for yous more than anything else.
Yeah, I wrote an article on this last year that we might reshare, I suppose. You know, it's basically a copy and paste job for this year because it was. Oi.
Content already asked.
Yeah, no. It was that. It was that. I'm just. It's all well and good, but I'm a bit sick of being told how good Liverpool were in the 80s because, great. You know, so many people bang on about, oh, look at Kenny Dalglish and how good he was. Yeah, fine, great. I don't know. I didn't see it. Right now, I'm looking back and I'm going, my life consists of Karius throwing two in, Steven Gerrard falling over, losing on penalties to Manchester City, Andy Carroll being
throwing away a Halle
5 millimeters away. Yeah, Andy Carroll being 5 millimeters away from equalising.
Throwing a game away.
Yeah, you know, Athens was pretty much the first one that I remember. You know, 08-09. I didn't know what you said then.
City beating us by a point.
Thanks, Ross. yeah, brilliant. So
no,
yeah,
but this is why we've got a generation of anxious.
Yeah.
Fearful and really like really edgy, nervous, and I'll be honest, not you Ben, but like really annoying Liverpool fans who have, and again I'm going to call these all, use all shit houses, I'm not tarring everyone with that, but of course you're right to feel doubt and you're right to feel like everything's going to go wrong because you've done nothing but watch Liverpool get close and fucking break your heart.
It's almost like I'm just waiting for that closure. It's all, like you saying there, like I won't if we win, but you saying that you can't walk away, it's almost like, well, if we win something, I can be like, well, I could die tomorrow and I'll be a happy man because that's what all I want, and I'm going to be in that ground on Saturday. All I want is that moment of, well, there it is. I've seen it. Those players have got that trophy in front of me. This is mad. Nobody can take this away from me, and that is all I'm crying out for in life.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Same.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, I had conversation with my United mates last year is when we got to the final, and I had a massive debate with him, and he was like, nobody remembers you if you finish second. And I was like, at the time, I was really emotional about it. I was like, but you don't understand, as not being a Liverpool fan, the journey we've been on to just be here is just such a relief. Like that, like last season, just to be there was just refreshing, because we're like, right, we're back. Like the flashes of, like I say, I was 7 in 2005, 13-14 was a flash in the pan, and that was when I really sort of really got super excited in football, and that was like, this was my moment as an older person that I can be like, okay, this is the Liverpool team that I've supported since I was born. I can say this is my generation of success. But then, like, watching Arsenal last night in Chelsea, I'm going to remember Arsenal losing the Europa League. Like, and that's just, like you say, hypocrisy in football. That's the reason. And it's very easy for me to go and get emotional about us getting to the final, but for a United fan, the fact we lost, it's like, well, yeah. Who cares?
It goes back to this thing, and it shouldn't matter, because we're all being sustained, hopefully, by Liverpool being brilliant. But I, you know, I'm still we're all tired by the pains and the suffering of Liverpool not being what we believe Liverpool to be, what we've been taught Liverpool's supposed to be, etc., etc. And it is, and to be honest, again, because we do live in this modern world where we are connected to so many knobheads of other football clubs, I it's something that you will feel slightly more acutely than me again, because I can at least have these visions in my mind. I was there when we won the two domestic cups in 2001. You know, I've seen us lift trophies with my own eyes. But it'd be fucking glorious. It would be lovely as a nice little addition, as a little sub story, as a sidebar, as the sprinkles on top of the cream, the cherry, and all that on top of this amazing cake. For all the Man United fans who go, "Oh, you think you're really good?" All of a sudden, I'm like, "We fucking are with the champions of Europe, lads. Yeah. Get back in your fucking hole." Yeah. And you know, we had one season. The best Liverpool chant of all time is, "We are the champions, champions of Europe." And I've never felt more I've never enjoyed. I'm been more happy to sing something on the terraces as I was in that season following Istanbul, and I want very much for all of you to be able to experience that, because
me too, Paul.
It's so good, lads. It's so good when Liverpool are brilliant and they win things. But in addition to this, one note on it all, why it's different, Ross, and you're still significantly younger than me, but obviously in the middle generation, I guess, between these guys, is that this is different. This doesn't feel like a resurgence of my Liverpool, of our Liverpool, the one that does it the hard way. It feels more like a resurgence of the Liverpool that we grew up being told about, the dominant 70s and 80s Liverpool side.
I think you can see it in the quality of the squad. Now we look around, you mentioned the characters and the quality that's there. That's why it feels different. You know, 2005, you know, you look back at some of the players in that team and the team that we faced, they're just going, we shouldn't really be here. We were boys amongst men in that sense. And it's the other way around this time, I think, you know. The leaders are men, in fact, you know, 97 points on the table, and there's just a whole different mentality, which I said before, resonates with the fans now. I think it's not self entitlement, it's confidence, and it's so different to want that. And it's not like we deserve, like you said before, we deserve to win it. It's like, you know, you can deserve to be there, can't you? And it's like, I'm fine with that. which is how far this article.
All you can ever ask is just for your football team to be. All you can ever ask is for the players in your football team to work their absolute bollocks off at any given time, because it's not their fault that they play for your team. Someone else has chosen them to play for your team. It's not their fault that you know they've been selected for that given match. But all you want to see is them go out and perform to the best of their abilities. It's all made loads easier when your football club gets its act together and gets a good tactical plan for them to adhere to and buys the best players they can possibly get to fit all this stuff. The whole thing is easier. But all we are entitled to is that if we pay our money, that the people do everything in their power to win stuff for us. And past that, everything else is a bonus. But it would just be nice if we could just fucking do it.
The players would be the same, though. You mentioned before they were there last season. You know, I think Klopp might have mentioned in his press conference again, like the target was always to win it this season. Yeah. You know, getting there last season was the target, and we did that. Mm. You know, I don't know, I've said this loads of times, but you know, the driving lesson or driving test thing, you're going, well, we know what's coming now, we know what to expect. Yeah. Like, that's all the media stuff, the side issue to them, go, it's routine almost because they've been there and they've done it. And it's like they can put the full concentration into the game, studying the Spurs players, and go, actually, we've got a fucking job to do here.
It's the fact that we constantly have to sort of double check ourselves when we say deserve, because it's such a word that, you know, that gets bantered around on Twitter and say you're not entitled to anything. You're right, we're not entitled to anything as football fans. But
we don't deserve it any more or less than Spurs do.
No, but
I feel as though we deserve it because I do, because this is my experience of football.
But it's the fact that I've done, like you said, we just spoke about the heartache of the last 15 years of football that I remember, and winning like two trophies in my memory, of which, well, the same memory that I've watched back on television. And it's the fact that even like going through all that heartache and constantly supporting them, every fan has that. That's something that everyone shares. But not a lot of teams share being really, really good and having nothing to show for it. And that's that's the working hard thing that we've had as fans, is that we've dragged ourselves from a League Cup to a Europa League to a Champions League and losing and losing and losing. And now I feel like we're on the brink of like a 2p machine. And like, as soon as one falls, everything comes down. Yeah. And it's just that. Being on the edge and just fall this year. I don't want to have to wait another year for it.
Yeah, it feels like a reward. It would feel like a reward if we won it. Just like, I don't want it for the club. I want it for my emotional state.
Just want relief.
Going, this is what you've been through. For like, even this season, this is just so hard. I was going, right, you've been through all that. Thanks. Here you go.
It goes back to the selfish side of things. And I think a lot about what we do and Redmen and the wider thing of what that means and the whole fan TV thing. That we are, you know, we created and we're embroiled in and we're part of, and we get tarred with the similar with brushes of negativity. And this is not a dig at Arsenal fan TV, which people will think it is, because loads of people do content, people film people outside of grounds, and people do just really shit stuff that makes us all look like knobheads and lunatics. What I love is the spirit of positivity. I love the fact that our videos go viral for the right reasons, because people love the atmosphere and they love the songs and they love the smiles and the happiness and they love the fucking positive, they love the positivity, they love that. And it Kiev cut the fucking legs off that last year. Like, that should have been the crown in glory. I've been doing this for 10 years and all we've ever tried to do is to promote the Scouse culture.
Unity.
To promote the glass half full, not blindly, stupidly so, not happy, clappy dickheads, but like, it's boss being a Liverpool fan even when we're shit, you know, and to try and sell that. And now when it is boss, for me and for our industry and all that, I'm desperate for it, just so that we can put those videos out there and we can talk about it and people can go, wow, yeah, look, it's possible to create content that doesn't need to be, it's not sex and it's not fucking misery in order to get views. It's not angry people shouting at things, like, you know, because it works for FIFA as well as it works for football, you know what I mean, and all those things. I'd love it for that. I just want to be able to be there. I started this channel amid the ownership protests. You know, we were recording fans protesting outside of Anfield, you know, singing about getting the Yanks out and all this kind of stuff. I'd love to be able to just come full circle and have it be Liverpool go from, basically, you know, in our time we went from the brink of administration to
Champions of Europe.
To Champions of Europe would be absolutely unreal. So, Ben, you're watching it in Madrid. We know this. Where are you two watching it?
I had a plan to watch it in the Echo. So they had tickets on there. So they had like seating and standing. And my mum, dad and brother wanted to come as well. So I managed to get two tickets for the standing, because I had a fuck sitting down watching it, couldn't get my arse of that. And then tried to get seat tickets then the next day and they sold out in 10 minutes. It's like, okay, sound. And then my grandparents had come down and I stayed another week, so I'm essentially watching it at home now. We're a little family affair.
Brilliant.
Yeah, which I'm fine with.
Yeah. Couple of warm tins. Well,
yeah, I've got the little one as well, so I can't get absolutely smashed. It's a bit of a shame.
Oh, well, never mind. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. Just a reaction as it happens. Bailey?
Yeah, I'm the opposite. Oh, that's my plan. Like, I'm going to sound with Tom, A, because he's my boyfriend, and B, because it was boss. I went there for the last game of the season, and it was packed. You were there, weren't you, Bern?
It was, oh yeah,
and it was packed. Everyone, like, there were people were getting City notifications before, and everyone's like, "What's happening?" And to be able to watch it in a place that's just really understand what it matters, like, that's exactly why I moved to Liverpool.
Amazing. We're gonna answer a few of your questions, some of them pertaining to the Champions League final. Before we do something, I've got it. I've got loads of brilliant stuff that I need to highlight to all of you, but the main one I'm pushing forward. Chris interviewed Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Jordan Henderson. There's a clip out on YouTube now for free. The full interview's on theredmentv.com. Have a listen.
Well, like Ox said, like, I've known Ox since like 21, so a long time now. I've been telling him to come for years, I think. Years and years.
Is that right? Yeah.
Years. Yeah.
I remember at Anfield, I don't know how long, we were in goal kit and you scored a last minute equaliser. I was fuming at the end of the game. We drew 2-2, but we probably should have held on for the win. At the end of the game, the only thing he come over and said is, come on, it's time. And honestly, I just... He was right though. Turns out he was in the end. I mean, at that point, I was fuming we didn't manage to win. But no, he's been telling me for a good few years to come. And when the opportunity did come up, it just made sense for me.
I can't stress how good this interview is. We got told this. We begged, stolen, borrowed our way into the media day, and I'd been asking and pestering, like, can we have Henderson, and we got offered both Henderson and Chamberlain, but we got told with like an hour beforehand, so it was like, shit, we've got to think of something to talk about. And Chris got his head down, prepared some questions, and I said, we've made a bit of a joke of it, obviously Chris can't go to the final because he accidentally, without thinking, booked his holiday a year ago on the dates. He's gutted. I don't want to continue to wind him up over that because it's not nice.
Watch MXP for that.
Watch the Major Paycheck channel where Jürgen Klopp winds him up instead. So I said, look, go on, you have this interview, because I wanted to give him something brilliant, and he's absolutely nailed it. The camaraderie between the two of them, the laughs, the joking, the little real great insight into the mentality. Oxlade-Chamberlain talking about coming back into the game against Huddersfield and breaking into the box and it being his chance to he's been dreaming of this for 12 months and scuffing a shot and him pissing himself laughing, talking about what was going through his head. All that stuff's in there. A little preview, obviously, the Champions League final, etc. We've also got a full interview there with Jürgen Klopp, which I did, and Gini Wijnaldum as well in the mix zone there. There is the extended version of the Boss Night Unplugged, which is, I think it's the best thing we've ever done. I absolutely adore it. So it's Jamie Webster and Kieran Molyneux playing the best Liverpool songs from the Boss Night stuff and talking about their inspirations, their lives, the motivations around it. Proper fascinating stuff. There's a short version of that. There's just loads. Go on the redmentv.com. Just sign up. Just do it. We give you this shit for free every single week. And if you like it, if you enjoy it and you want to support what we do, if you want to back us, back RedmenTV, back Fan TV, back Positive Fan TV, then go and subscribe to theredmentv.com and we will reward you with a shit ton of brilliant content. I think it's only fair. Billy Ramsey, favourite celebration of the season? It can be a personal one, team one, some fella in a bar, or a player one.
Bizarrely for me,
I just dove in there. I love it.
Divock Origi scoring against Everton and decided to pick the ball up and take it back to the halfway line. Why did he do that? Yeah, I love it. He's like, oh, I've won. Okay.
And football.
Football, life, yes. And obviously Klopp's running on the pitch and all that. But that, it was just really bizarre and confusing to watch him. That's really.
Mine's to Barcelona, 4-0 with all the players and staff that are lined up. Yeah. And Rossing, you never walk alone. It's like, he just gets me every fucking time. It's like, you never walk alone, it means a lot to people for different reasons. And it's got really emotional, like, connotations with it and stuff. And it's like, I was watching that, I remember sat with my dad, and it's like, we're both just like, go, Jesus Christ.
Mine was Salah against Chelsea after he scored his worldie. For many reasons. A, because it came, that goal obviously came off the back of, you know, the West Ham and Chelsea racism stuff in that same week. B, he didn't celebrate against Chelsea last season, and this time it was like a mix of both. Like, it's him giving it the peace sign, saying, I'm a pacifist, I don't give a shit what you call me. And then also saying, like, this is not me celebrating, but I'm also really, really celebrating. You know, I mean, he's not giving it the big fist bumps and stuff. He's just going, I'm the shit.
That's it. My one, there's so many to choose from in the Origi stuff, just more from nearly falling down the cop celebrating that goal. But Si's doing the Road to Madrid documentary at the moment. I think it's going up on the website Thursday, Friday. It's amazing. But I found the video. He was asking for the Trent corner, Divock Origi fourth goal, and I stumbled upon the full time whistle. That celebration at the full time whistle of the Barcelona game, like, we celebrated that like the biggest goal we'd ever scored, and it's so rare that you get that. You have that, you know, you've had those sense of relief at times, like, hey, the full time whistle, woo! But it was like just the scream. It was like screaming and celebrating and grabbing people and hugging stuff. Yeah, I've never felt a full time celebration quite like that. So that's mine. Let us know yours in the comments. Right, we're gonna leave you there. We're gonna pack up our stuff, get ourselves ready, get our heads on straight, fill our boots full of phenomenal Redmen TV content, ahead of the game. Make sure you get involved, do subscribe to the redmentv.com, drop a like on this video if you enjoyed it. If you listen to it on podcasting services, give it a 5-star review as well. Gentlemen,
see you on once more into the breach.
Yeah, see you on the other side. Walk on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.